When it comes to workforce planning, each new year presents a whole new set of challenges. The landscape of talent acquisition is changing at a rapid pace. Talent acquisition specialists are being pushed to accomplish more with less, while numerous challenges and opportunities, from talent shortages to diversity-conscious recruiting, remain. I'm Joe McIntyre, host of Talking Talent Solutions, a DZ Connects podcast. Each episode of this podcast will highlight how the Total Talent Solutions approach can help organizations across industries solve complex talent needs while helping decrease their costs and improve their business operations. On this episode, we will discuss why having well-defined short-term and long-term plans is crucial to ensure sustainable talent management strategies while effectively addressing immediate staffing needs. We'll talk about some of those solutions, like managed service programs, or MSPs, and recruitment process outsourcing programs, or RPOs, and how they can help solve many of the challenges organizations are currently facing. We'll also talk about what's new in the world of talent acquisition and how 2024 may be a year of many changes and surprises in enterprise recruiting. Today, I'm joined by Marcia Haygood, Vice President at DZ Connects. Marcia brings nearly three decades of industry knowledge and leadership skills to her work with DZ Connects. As Vice President, Marcia directs the strategy for overall sales, implementation, and operations for DZ Connects. She also spearheads account development and expansion, while also providing sales and operational support for existing accounts. A lot of stuff I mentioned there, Marcia, but welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me today. I appreciate it.
Well, it's great to have you. So let's dive right in. Okay. There have been so many changes and surprises that businesses, and specifically their hiring managers, have had to face in the past few years. I'm guessing today, where we are, March 13th, 2024, is no different. How do you see it, Marcia? What can we expect in the near future? Maybe what's something we might see that many people may not expect?
Yeah, so I was thinking about this and trying to figure out kind of what the approach is and what we should be expecting to see in 2024 and 2025. And I think what some of the things that stood out to me is, number one, is upskilling. I think that a lot of people talk about upskilling, but I feel like organizations really need to start thinking about practices and what they can put in place to afford opportunities for their current employees for upskilling. Because I think, as we see in the economy, that demand for talent is still out there, right? There are a certain number of people that are in the job market right now. You have several, you know, workers that are currently with your organization that want opportunities. They want development opportunities. So how can you really take advantage of that? So being able to upskill is going to be something that I feel like is, we talk about a lot, but I think that it's something that clients really need to start thinking about how they can actually execute on that strategy. Another thing is, as we talk about, is, you know, AI. You name it, people are talking about it, all aspects of it. How can we utilize it? You know, how can we utilize it in a way where we're not being unconsciously biased in those practices? I was actually on a recent presentation with one of our VMS partners, and they have something coming out in an upcoming enhancement where the hiring manager will actually be able to use AI to help write their job descriptions for them. So we're starting to see it more and more in technology. I know a lot of companies are using it. They're using it in different aspects, but really being able to understand it and how it can effectively support your organization and drive success in recruiting, I think is going to be very key. And then, you know, continuing to look at how we maintain work-life harmony for our employees, I think is something that's going to be very important. You know, we just came out, can't believe it's been 4 years already, but we're just coming out of the pandemic. And if something like that comes around again, how are we going to set ourselves up for success when we have to force people potentially to work from home? And it's not just about, you know, what computers you have available, what systems you have set up, but it's also about recognizing that your employees need support beyond the technical aspect of it, and making sure that they are getting the support that they need, that if for some reason we are hit with another pandemic or something of that nature, that all, you know, when you're looking at holistically how those employees are functioning, that their clients and their employers are supporting them with that. So those are just a few things that I think about. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of the things you mentioned are about future planning or being just simply prepared for what's to come.
Yeah.
And I think businesses across industries prepare for how their business outcomes or their sales may change or what or whatever it may be. But supporting talent by being prepared for what's to come in that area feels like something that many businesses either don't prioritize or ignore, or I don't. What is your perspective there? Is that really the case?
I feel like they don't prioritize it. I think it's something that if you're living in the current and you're living in the now, you're really focused on what you need to do today. And I think sometimes it's not intentional, but sometimes we can forget about the workers that are already there. You know, you're so focused on bringing in more talent, but you need to also think about how do you keep your current talent. And how, when you hire that talent, how do you keep that retain that talent? So, you know, it can be difficult because when you're looking at that, that's not revenue generating, right? They look at, you know, what is going to bring in the revenue. So they're not really focused on that. But the reality of it is that it may not be revenue generating, but it can be revenue savings because the time and investment that you make on training new talent, developing new talent when coming in the door, you need to really look at how you can also focus on the talent that you have inside your organization now and how you can really ensure that you are getting as much productivity out of those workers.
Let's talk about what building a successful workforce plan will need to look like in 24 and 25. What are some strategies that would ensure that your workforce planning aligns with the overall goals and objective of your company? And, you know, essentially, what is the best way to define your hiring goals and objectives? Is it easy? I'm assuming it's not as easy as it sounds.
I don't think it's as easy as it sounds. And I think it starts with understanding that there are two types of planning that you can do as an organization, right? There's hire planning, which focus on like the immediate hiring needs that you have, and that's going to be within a shorter time frame. And then the workforce planning really takes a much broader long-term approach, and you have to look at it strategically. So I think that those are some things that are important is that before you can even start thinking about that, you've got to figure out where am I in this phase? Am I really, if what I'm talking about right now is really hire planning, then I really need to do, you know, a better job of looking at from a strategic perspective, how my organization can really start thinking about workforce planning because workforce planning aligns with a broader scope. It really needs to bring in a lot more individuals into the conversation. We recently did a webinar back in October, November timeframe, and we were talking about this. And the reality of it is that with workforce planning, you really need to put a project around it, right? It's not something that necessarily one person can take on. You've got a lot of individuals that need to be involved. You need to be looking at your organization as a whole and putting up processes and putting up scopes of what you think about as far as workforce planning and the skill developments and the needs that you're going to have. And that's not something that you can just necessarily throw on one individual, but it needs to be a holistic approach across the entire organization. So I think that in order to kind of really prepare yourself for that, you've got to be able to really distinguish the two and then make sure that you're making the right commitment to workforce planning, which includes the right individuals involved, the right time to really look at the processes, the trends, and all of those things, and just making sure that you've got the right objectives in place.
Now, pandemics may certainly be hard to plan for, and you mentioned that earlier, but how can businesses make sure their planning methods are flexible enough to respond to new trends or problems or pandemics as they arise? What tools do they have or what should they think about before these problems even happen?
Well, I think that when I think about this, I look at the fact that you can't just look at one particular area, right? You can't just look at if this were to happen, do we have all of the technology do we need? Do we have all the systems in place? I think you have to look at kind of take a look back at the impact of a pandemic that the pandemic had on your business, but then also looking at lessons learned about things that you may not have been prepared for that you can proactively start preparing yourself for. And we talked a little bit about that earlier, that it's not just the technical aspect of it or the systems and making sure people can log in every single day, but it's also about making sure that your employees are cared for in a way that they can still continue to be productive in those types of situations. So looking at not just You know, do we have Zoom? Do we have Teams? Do we have everything that everyone can function? But how is this going to impact their day to day? Because, you know, if you think about a pandemic or problems or things of that nature, it doesn't just impact that actual worker, but it impacts everything around them, their entire livelihood. So their life and whether they have children or spouses or partners or all of those things. And how can we look at how we can, as an organization, care for that to ensure that they can still feel like they are being productive and making an impact?
I mean, this is all difficult. I'm sure many organizations understandably, you know, don't have staffing expertise to fulfill their talent needs on their own while also focusing on the success of the business. You talked about focusing on revenue and, you know, maybe ignoring some of those talent needs. So what are some ways businesses can close their talent gaps? What strategies or support can they turn to?
Yeah, well, I think first off, they need to identify what those skill gaps are. I think that's going to be important. So, you know, we talk about analysis, but, you know, data drives everything. So making sure that you've got the right technology that's pulling the right data and information for you to be able to make those decisions and look at really where you are as far as your skill gaps. I think that is really important. That also lends itself to the opportunity to maybe finding ways that you can start upskilling. So if you have those skill gaps, if you've got high potential individuals within your organization, right now gives you the time to be able to upskill and utilize this time to maybe plug in some of those skill gaps that you have within your organization. Your recruitment and hiring practices are also going to be important. So we all know that there's various channels and ways that you can do those, job boards, social media, but there are other ways that you can actually pull in as well. Take this opportunity to be more involved in networking events. You know, employee referrals are extremely important for an organization. You know, it speaks to how your employees feel about you as an organization. So build up a robust employee referral program that gives you an opportunity to have better outreach for potential candidates. And, you know, we talked about training and development. It's an investment that will pay dividends in the end. So making sure that you've got an organizational development team and plan in place. So when you get those individuals in, you have a pretty robust training and development program to support them and promoting diversity and inclusion. You know, it's diversity is one of our core values within our organization. And I think that is really important is that you focus on that as you're looking at your hiring practices, as you look at bridging your skill gaps. This is an opportunity for you to be able to make the right investments in promotion of diversity and inclusion. And then finally, I'd say succession planning. You know, we don't talk a lot about succession planning when we talk about workforce planning, but I think it's extremely important because in doing so, you also not only find your skill gaps, but you find your succession gaps. And I think it's really important to have that integrated into that process as well.
These are all incredible tips and great ideas, some mix of short and long term. But as businesses grow and evolve, having a long term workforce planning strategy is critical. So maybe you could talk about what some of the ways or reasons having a strong RPO or recruitment process outsourcing program can enhance that workforce planning process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think first and foremost, I would say that right now is an ideal time to consider an RPO. And some people will say, well, why? We don't have any openings. You know, this is not the best time of the year. We actually are on a hiring freeze, but this is really an opportunity where you can take a step back and look at RPO solutions and make the determination of whether or not that's the best choice for your organization. But the key thing is that RPO provides scalability. You know, they can scale recruit. We can scale recruitment efforts up or down and fluctuate with organizations. And I think that is really important when you're trying to make sure that when you're doing your hiring planning, which is your, you know, on demand, what you need, tactical planning, having a partner and an RPO provider that has that scalability is key. Another thing is that you're bringing in an RPO provider because they have a specialized expertise, right? They're experts in sourcing and screening and attracting talent, and they're going to bring the right tools and technology for you, and they're going to be able to make switches in those tools and technologies that will afford them the opportunity to support that scalability that you need. And then efficiencies. You know, you look at the way that RPOs work, and our RPO business specifically, we're able to streamline the recruitment process. And a lot of times that what you get from that is reducing your time to fill and improving your overall efficiency. And that allows clients to be able to quickly fill critical positions and avoid productivity disruption. So I think that's a big thing. We can talk about cost savings. Everyone wants to talk about cost savings. But another thing that I like to bring in is market insights. You know, when you bring in an RPO provider, they're going to have access to market intelligence that you may not have access to. That's going to come from their various affiliations, other clients that they have within their portfolio, and they're able to provide those insights and bring in those salary benchmarking, competitive landscapes, you know, helping the organization make informed decisions.
Now, covered RPOs, let's turn our attention quickly to MSPs. We've covered what they are and how they work on previous episodes of this podcast, and we'll link to that in the episode description. But Marcia, can you talk a bit more about the current state of MSPs? I'm sure they evolve as the times evolve, and also maybe get into what their future may look like. What's new now?
Yeah, so I feel like you're aging me in this question because I've been in the in the MSP space since, should I say, 1999. So that's where majority of my experience comes in on the RPO side, on the MSP side. And I think that the MSP market continues to grow, right? We know that there are a lot of MSP providers out there, and it depends on how you define MSP. You'll see MSP providers that only focus on the technical space, or MSP providers like ourselves, DZ Connects, where we provide the total talent solution. So we're doing it across various industries, various skill sets. But I think that the reason why it continues to grow is because clients continue to rely on contingent workers and external vendors to meet their staffing needs. And it's driven and it's expanding because of the need for clients to have workforce flexibility. They still want that cost management and they want access to talent. MSPs are expanding their service offerings, which we see more and more, like ourselves, where you can see that they offer a statement of work. They offer an independent contractor, advisory services. So you're starting to see a lot of MSPs take a consultative approach when it comes to working with their clients, which affords them the opportunity to really be able to grow with that client, to drive strategy with that client, and to actually develop that client and put them on a strategic plan to help them support them in various areas outside of just contingent workforce. And then technology integrations. You're seeing a lot of MSPs that are really relying heavily on VMS technologies and other technologies, providing those integrations and that support to clients. So I think that you're seeing more and more of that. And as those technologies come into play, you know, the advantage of having an MSP is their flexibility to be able to work with those various technologies and bring to the clients opportunities where they can have better service offerings. Mm-hmm.
So, Marcia, you mentioned MSP. Let's talk a little bit about second-gen MSP. We're relatively early in the new year, and I'm sure it's never a bad time, but what should be factored into the decision to go to a second-gen MSP, and why should a business consider one today versus, you know, later in the year, years from now? What goes into that?
Yeah. I think a big thing is that what is your MSP doing for you today? Are they pretty tactical? Are they really focused on strategic for you? A lot of times you can see that in your business reviews. How are they approaching your business reviews? Is it really data driven? Are they coming up with bringing to you trends, opportunities, ways that they understand your business and recommendations of how you can move your business forward? If they're not doing that, then it's probably time for you to start looking at a different partner. But you also have to be prepared for that. I think a lot of times clients think that they're ready to move into the next phase. They want to be more strategic. They're getting that from their current provider, but they, for some reason, they're just not moving forward. So you have to make a determination of whether or not it's an internal issue or is it an external issue, because there's only so much that an MSP can do if you're not open and ready to receive the recommendations to move the business forward. So I think that's really important. So for me, and if you're thinking about a second generation, you've got to think about the fact that you've gotten your cost containment, You've got your centralization. If you don't have any of those, then you definitely need to be thinking about a second generation MSP. But the assumption is that you've gotten to that point. But now, how is your MSP acting for you? Are they being strategic? Are they going, you taking it to the next level, consultative approach? And if you're not getting that, then that's when you need to start thinking about it.
Yeah. When should they call? Let's assume a company is not working with TZ Connects currently. When should they call you? At what point in the process? Not being facetious, but it, you know, how do they know? I think things are going well. Maybe I'm ready for the second one. When should they be calling folks like you?
I think that they should be calling us when they start thinking about that question. I think it's an opportunity to be able to have the right discussions early on, and regardless of whether or not the decision is made to move forward or stay with your current MSP provider, at least you have kind of an opportunity to look at, you know, is this really the right MSP provider for me? Am I asking the right questions? Am I getting everything that I need to be getting from them? So I think that there's always an opportunity to have discussions. I think that's really important. You know, we're in the business of, you know, networking and consulting and providing support. And a lot of times MSP relationships start, you know, 12 to 18 months before any decisions are made. And I think that's the great thing about our organization is that we do a lot of networking, and we're really here to just be able to provide that consultative approach. And we're not afraid to say we may not be the best provider for you, or you may be in the right situation that you need to be in right now. But here are some things that you need to think about down the road. And when you're ready to kind of make that transition, we're here to support.
Takes a good provider to save that, for sure, to be honest with folks like that.
Yeah, you have to be honest with it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you talked a lot about the future and the current state of MSPs, and we cannot talk about the future of hiring without mentioning artificial intelligence and AI. I know you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but let's dig just a bit deeper. How is this technology currently being used in the hiring space, and what are some of the positives and maybe also some of the pitfalls of using AI technology?
So I think that, you know, obviously automation. So that's one of the primary benefits, especially in RPO, lies in the ability for AI to automate repetitive and time-consuming processes. So you see a lot of that. So you don't find yourself where you're having to do manual job postings and scheduling and coordination. Artificial intelligence has really come in and been able to impact that. Another thing is predictive analytics. You know, the ability to be able to take resumes and rank resumes based on skill sets and what candidate skills are more likely to get you to the point of success in your project that you're working on. You know, those are things that you're seeing that AI tools are using, are being used for. And then, as I said just a second ago, candidate analysis. So, making sure that you are being, you know, not being biased in that process, but having the AI support you on the candidate analysis, at least the preliminary analysis of ensuring that they have meet the minimum requirements that you're looking for. You see more and more of that. So I think those are some of the areas. As far as the, you know, the pitfalls of it, biases and blind spots. I mean, automation can only do so much, right? So the thing that we don't want to do and, you know, have any unconscious bias taking place when it comes to candidates, because a lot of times that can drive concerns for diversity and inclusion. Privacy concerns is something else that people are really concerned about. We hear that a lot as we're going through our quarterly business reviews with our clients, is that how are we going to ensure that we are, that things are remaining private, PII information, all of those things. So, and the systems, you know, the AI systems may not necessarily take the same legal precautions that we would as an organization when we're managing that. So we've got to figure out how we can manage through the privacy concerns. And then finally, laws and regulations. You know, this is new. So, you know, I'll share a quick story with you. My husband is actually in the media and entertainment industry. And one of the things, as everyone knows, is that there have been, you know, strikes that have happened recently. And one of the biggest things that they've been talking about is AI. And being able to use AI in those types of instances with media and entertainment. And, you know, you don't know what you don't know yet, right? So how can you regulate something that you're still really trying to learn more and more about? So I think that's another problem. And then finally, public perception. You know, I'm old school. So it's tough to think that there is something that is going to be in my computer that's going to be able to do all these things for me. Although I do like playing around with ChatGPT. So I think that the public perception is still kind of up in the air about AI and how much do we want it to be used. And I think as generations mature, we will see more and more of that public perception not being so much of a concern. But we still got, you know, we've got the baby boomers out there. We've got my generation out there. So there's still a little apprehension going on, but we'll see how it goes.
Totally makes sense. Totally makes sense. I want to go a little bit back to what you said maybe a few questions ago and talk about workplace diversity and inclusion. I think we know that this is no longer just something that companies are saying, but there is pressure now in a good way to actually bring these to life. So how should workforce planning approaches modify their strategies and services to ensure employers have a more diverse, you know, workforce, and not only this year in 2024, but beyond? I'm sure this is going to keep evolving in a great way, but what should they be doing now?
You know, we get this discussion a lot with clients, even current clients and even prospect clients. And I think a lot of times I want to say, well, what are you doing today in your current business? Like, when you have someone who is diverse and they come into your organization, what is it that you're doing to ensure that they feel like they have you have an inclusive environment? So I always say that you need to start internally. You know, what have you set up internally for that to be able to then, and I don't want to, you know, use this terminology, but to bleed out and that people can see it when they, you know, when they go and read about your organization, or when they talk to individuals within your organization, you know, are they speaking that language? Are your interviewing practices set up in a way that you are supporting a diverse, you know, candidate slate and opportunities for diverse candidates? So I think the big thing for me is it's always got to start internally. You've got to create an inclusive work environment. The employees have to feel valued. They have to feel respected and empowered. And if you do that, then that will make things a lot easier when you start looking at how you then want to take those practices and ensure that they're aligned in a way that you're bringing in that diverse workforce. I think that's really important.
Marcia, do you have any big predictions, good or bad, positive or negative, in the world of total talent in the year ahead? Maybe any advancements, changing trends, or otherwise? Again, positive, negative. We want to hear both.
I think, so, first of all, I'm not good at making predictions, because if I did, I'd have won the lottery already. So I'll just say that. Is that I've been seeing a lot of is that a lot of individuals assume that people would have a lot of apprehension about going back to work and not working remotely. And I feel like there is a generation out there that actually appreciates the opportunity to get in the office at least a couple days a week. And I want to tell you why I feel that way, Joe, because I remember when I started out just 5 short years ago, just kidding, quite a while ago, your foundation was built around being in the office and collaborating and interacting. And honestly, friendships were formed. Communities were built out of that. And I think that, you know, the generation that we see right now in the workforce a lot, they are missing that. They're just coming out of college. They're not getting that opportunity. It can be a little bit isolated. So I think that it would be, it's going to be interesting to see how the remote work opportunities layout as far as in the future, because I do feel like there are individuals that feel like they would benefit of having more time in the office. I think that's one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say on that point specifically, there are people who love working from home, and that's great. But the people who want to go in sometimes are made to feel a certain way or feel, you know, shame that they want to go in or see other people. But especially for younger folks, there is tremendous value, like you said, in that collaborative approach, in simply osmosis of learning from those around you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I wouldn't take that back. I mean, I've enjoyed the number of years that I've worked remotely, but I was also in a different space in my life. So it's different. So I think that we have to be prepared for the fact that there are going to be people that are going to need that office environment and community. I think another thing is, again, I feel like clients are not doing enough of it, but we need to focus on skill-based hiring. I think that there is a greater emphasis on skills and not so much on the traditional qualifications. Look, when I graduated from college, I just needed a degree. A degree with good grades, and people, you know, that showed clients that you were disciplined enough and you can come into the workforce. It's not like that anymore. So we need to find ways that we can embrace individuals that may not necessarily have a 4-year degree, but still could add significant value to your organization. I think that's going to be a big piece of it as well. And I think it's slowly shifting a little bit in that direction, but as the cost of college goes up, you're going to find more and more individuals that are not going to be interested in that route. And we've got to be prepared for that. Yep.
Finally, last question here, Marcia. What should companies considering changing their talent approach in the year ahead and over the next 12 months, why should they decide to partner with DZ Connects? What is it that we are bringing to the table that others probably aren't?
So this is an interesting question because it's like, what do you want to say? You don't want to say too much. You don't want to give out your secrets, right?
Right.
Tell me and I'll tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
The big thing for me is, and for those who may not know on the podcast, but I've been with the organization for almost 25 years with DZX. And I think the key thing for me is that we are leveraging 120 years of experience as an organization, as a privately held organization. We are a solutions provider. That's what we are. That's in our DNA. That's our foundation. And that really expands out throughout all of our various business units and web. So, you know, when we look at innovative process, personalized care for our customers, and we deliver workforce solutions. That's what we do. That's what our focus is. That's what we do day in and day out. We ensure that our talent is set up for that. If you look at, you know, 80% of our clients are 10 years or older as far as our tenure. If you look at our staff, we're very focused on talent development. We've got an average of 7 years with our staff. So I feel like, you know, our customized talent solutions approach, including our MSP services, RPO services, and SOW services, it speaks for our, you know, tenure in these types of businesses. And I think that's really important. And our dedicated teams, we form long lasting partnerships with our clients and we can take you on that journey. And I think that's what really is important. You know, we can be your Gen 1, Gen 2 and beyond MSP provider or talent solutions and workforce solutions provider for you.
Well, Marcia, thanks so much for joining Talking Talent Solutions. It was so great to get to talk to you. For our listeners who want to learn more either about you or about DZ Connects, potentially partnering together, how should they contact you?
Oh, definitely. They can reach us on our website, dzconnects.com. And also, obviously, I've been with the organization for a long time. My LinkedIn account is out there. Last name is H-A-G-O-O-D. I know people like to put a Y in there, but even though it's Haygood, it's H-A-G-O-O-D, so it's Marcia Haygood. But definitely our website. And obviously, anytime that they'd like to have a discussion, just reach out via LinkedIn. We're happy to discuss and share more of our best practices and our trends.
Wonderful. And to hear past and future episodes of this podcast, we ask that you please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen in. Also, don't forget to rate, subscribe, and review. For Talking Talent Solutions, I'm Joe McIntyre. Thanks for listening.